I'm Janitara Begum, and I work in Operation Unite, and you're tuned to 90.7 FM WGXC. ACRA. Get it together.
All together now, the 6 p.m. Monday through Saturday newscast for Greene and Columbia Counties is looking for contributors. If you have an idea for a regular or irregular segment, or if you want to interview the public at a local event or write stories for the WGXC newsroom at WGXC.org, send an email to info@WGXC.org. All together now. Get it together.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by the First Presbyterian Church of Hudson, a faith community open to all. Whether you are single, married, divorced, gay, wealthy, poor, or no habla inglés, if you are just browsing, just woke up, or just got out of jail, it doesn't matter if you work on Wall Street or if you sleep on Wall Street, you belong. We love soccer moms, crying babies, vegans, hipsters, seekers and doubters, tourists and locals. All are welcome. Services held Sunday mornings at 10:45 a.m. You can find us on the web at firstpreshudson.org.
From the WGXC newsroom, this is the WGXC Hands-On Radio Daily News. I'm Philip Grant. Kirsten Palpini reports in the Berkshire Eagle that a store in Northampton, Massachusetts began selling legal marijuana at 8:30 a.m. November 20th. The New England Treatment Access Shop was one of two spots in the state to begin sales, while others wait to be approved. In the Berkshires, 8 stores are awaiting approval by the Cannabis Control Commission. 4 have received provisional approval and are waiting for their final licenses. Massachusetts first voted to legalize medical marijuana in 2012 and then voted to legalize recreational pot in 2016. New York currently has one of the nation's most restrictive medical marijuana laws in the country. Read the full story in the Berkshire Eagle. The New York State Department of Environmental Conservation announced November 20th grant awards totaling $902,888 for 24 Hudson River estuaries. DEC Commissioner Basil Sago said, and I quote, "The Hudson River is a vital part of New York's identity and one of our defining natural assets. With the state's steadfast support and investment, many riverfront communities are pursuing projects that advance stewardship of their natural resources, such as sustainable shoreline techniques, source water protection, and green infrastructure planning. These grant awards build on local conservation efforts and priorities by advancing new possibilities for nature-based tourism and its associated economic benefits," end quote. The grants include $39,984 for Columbia Land Conservancy Incorporated for an education program at the Greenport Conservation Area, $49,855 for Trout Unlimited Incorporated for culvert replacement in the town of Taconic, $50,000 for a riverfront park in Rensselaer County's village of Castleton-on-the-Hudson, $27,750 for an education program from Poughkeepsie Highland Railroad Bridge Company Incorporated on the walkway over the Hudson, $50,000 for Riverkeeper Incorporated for Wallkill River water quality improvements, $37,000 for the Hudson River Sloop Clearwater for an education program in Newburgh and Kingston, $49,285 for the villages of Piermont and Catskill and the city of Kingston for a flood resilience project, $50,000 for the town of Esopus to strengthen the Esopus shoreline and regional trails, and $40,000 for the Hudson River Maritime Museum for a climate change education project. Find out more on the DEC's website. The Albany Times Union reports that someone shot several rounds into the Pop's Place restaurant on Route 145 in Preston Hollow November 18th. The diner was closed when it was shot up and is now riddled with bullet holes. Albany County Sheriff Craig Apple said no one was injured and no one has been arrested. Read the full story in the Times Union. Thomas Beaumont reports for the Associated Press, New York Governor Andrew Cuomo, and I quote, has contacted Des Moines area Democrats, end quote, about a possible presidential campaign. Iowa holds the first caucus in 2020 to decide the Democratic nominee. On November 21st, Cuomo dismissed talk of any presidential ambition, saying, and I quote, I am going to stick with New York State, end quote. Previously, New York Senator Kirsten Gillibrand said she is considering a run for president, too. Read the full story on the Associated Press website. Sarah Tapton reports for Columbia Green Media that the Cosmic Cinema Movie Theater opened November 19th with showings of Windows, Fantastic Beasts, The Crimes of Grindelwald, and Instant Family. The movie theater sells food and alcohol at 160 Fairview Avenue in Greenport in the former Fairview Cinema 3 and Angela's Pizza and Pasta locations. Owner Terrell Barley was the founder, CEO, and chairman of Cinebar, a similar theater. He is also CEO of Alamo Drafthouse Cinemas and has plans for more Cosmic Cinemas in Albany at the former Madison Theater and in other locations around the country. Read the full story at HudsonValley360.com. And that wraps up the WGXC Hands-On Radio Daily News. For local weather reports, public meetings, and other community information, use the WGXC website, WGXC.org. From the WGXC Newsroom, I'm Philip Graham. Have a good day and a happy and healthy Thanksgiving.
WGXC's At Issue. I'm your host, John Kane. I'm here with Rebecca Wolf today of Hudson, New York. Welcome, Rebecca.
Thank you.
And we're going to talk about housing today and some of the various challenges we're facing here in Hudson with housing. Rebecca, you got involved in housing through Affordable Housing Hudson, mm-hmm. Which I was also involved in. Can you tell us a little bit about that organization?
Sure. I mean, that got started. It was an effort to address some of the you know, obviously growing concerns of the city, and just a decision to bring people together. That's really what the meaning of that group was to create a public face for the concern and to create, basically, you know, sometimes I like to think of Affordable Housing Hudson as a mailing list of people who are concerned and who came out to the first events that we did. We had three public forums. It was in, I believe, 2017 that we had these public forums.
Seems like last year, but yeah, I know. Time seems to be dilating.
Well, you know, everything in 2017 has been...
It's 2018.
I'm sorry. That's right. See, 2017 was rough, then 2018. Anyways,
don't worry, guys. We're not going to talk about too many numbers today.
No, hardly any at all. But Affordable Housing Hudson, I know for a fact we had three public forums that each addressed different concerns around housing specific to Hudson. And we had a bunch of different like you could call them experts in housing. We had the first one was people who deal with actual literal affordable housing, real estate development. And then the next one, what did we have? You were there.
It was, I know we did short-term rentals.
We had, that was the third one, which sort of segues into what I think we're going to talk about today. Our second one, I can't remember, but we had people from Galvin Foundation. We had people from Habitat for Humanity. And then the third one was about the issue of short-term rentals in Hudson.
Right. And while that seems to be on a lot of people's minds, it's certainly not the only issue that we're dealing with when we talk about housing in
Hudson. Absolutely not.
And I think just from my experience, knowing it, you know, I told you I'm shopping for a new apartment right now. Housing seems to be the number one issue that I think Hudson is facing. The shortage of housing, or rather, if not the shortage, the dearth of available housing as we go into 2019.
Right. And I mean, it's, you know, with when you talk about housing, it's always a sliding signifier, if you will, because, you know, what's affordable to some, like whenever you talk about affordable housing, for example, the question arises immediately. Well, what do you mean affordable housing?
Yeah, affordable to whom?
Exactly.
Because the area median income has not really gone up.
Right. And the truth is there's some really specific answers. And I hope that we can get to a place in the conversation where we no longer have to ask that over and over. Like affordable with a capital A has really specific percentages of income that apply to it. Then there's the concept of how do we keep housing affordable for workforce people, which is the, you know, lowercase a.
Right.
Like, how do we keep housing affordable for people who are not super resourced?
Right. Because if an employer wants to move up and open up an office here from Brooklyn, you know, probably one of the attractions of opening up an upstate office is that they can pay their employees a little bit less, but their employees will still enjoy a better lifestyle because housing costs are lower, transportation costs are lower. And, you know, they can put a little bit of money away and that could be attractive to employers. But right now, you know,
and then
rents are kind of on par with Brooklyn.
Well, totally. And then there's the fact that Hudson, I mean, the problems specific to Hudson that are, I think, remarkable are that, you know, it's a hierarchy of needs situation. Like you have people living in Hudson who are truly lower income and you know, and who rely on subsidized housing and capital A affordable housing to make their lives workable. Then you have a lot of people who have been loving living in Hudson because it was affordable lowercase a and meant that they could be artists. They could be, you know, living in a way that where they were maybe producing amazing food for people or, you know, making amazing, you know, crafts and things and living a less stressful life, right? Now what you have going on is what happens in gentrifying communities, which is that but it's in because of the size of Hudson and it's so condensed and it's so concentrated, it's like a microcosm of gentrification. You have this thing happening where the consumers of these amazing, beautiful goods are all buying up the properties that formerly were occupied by the producers.
Right.
And so, yeah, so.
And
right.
I mean, that's a larger conversation that's going to happen, I think, everywhere. I don't know that there's a very simple solution to that.
No, I don't think there's any simple solution.
I moved
solutions.
Up from New York City several years ago. You know, the rent was one of the factors that really attracted me to Hudson.
Sure.
You know, it's certainly not the case anymore, but I'm not an evil person.
No, I'm not saying you're evil, John. Don't feel defensive.
Well, no. And no, but, you know, I don't think, you know, there is this idea that these city people are coming up and popping up, you know, they're snapping up all the properties and there's nothing we can really do.
Well, that's not true, but I mean, I think that there's micro things that people do that change situations. And so to say, like, there's nothing we can do is not true.
Well, not to stop people from buying properties.
No, of course, you can't literally, lie down in front of a building and say, you know, you may not purchase this building.
Right, because those people were also chased out of Brooklyn by somebody who moved in with more money.
Well, so that's what, a while ago when I was first becoming a landlord in Hudson, which I want to really openly say I am.
Get off my show.
Ha. No, I'm the right person to be sitting on your show. Right. But so when I decided to be a landlord in Hudson, I was, you know, having a lot of conscience crises about it, which I'd already been having just basically living in Hudson and watching the process go on. Mm-hmm. I realized at a certain point, it's not a, you know, there are like gradations of bad behavior as a gentrifier. And some people, like, to say that anyone, you know, anyone who moves to a place and like takes advantage of the fact that they can afford the rent there, like moving to a place from another place, you know, is a terrible person. That's not possible. You can't say that. But what you can say is that somebody who essentially is a real estate developer who from afar, however afar, whether
or a speculator, if not an
or agent. A speculator, you know, and on whatever scale. Like I'm talking also about somebody who lives in, say, you know, Germantown, for example, and looks on realtor.com and sees, oh, there's a building in Hudson that I could buy for cheap and then I could turn it into, for example, a short-term rental. That person is not being a good actor.
Right.
In my humble opinion. However, and that's, I mean, for me, from my somewhat single-minded perspective, that is where we can do things. And so, you know, and then I guess just to continue that line of thought for a second, even farther away, like somebody from the city who has no community goals, shall we say. You got no community goals. Your goal is to make some money. That's something that we should.
I mean, it's a laudable goal. I understand people are, you know, they're saving for their retirement. At the same time,
you know,
we have to balance out. Just because you're saving for your retirement just doesn't mean the community has to see itself
right
torn asunder.
That's right. It doesn't.
Right. And that doesn't mean that you're doing a bad thing, but neither is the community.
Well, actually, I think that it's fair to say, in a certain sense, you are doing a bad thing. I mean, people have to at some point, like, accept that their actions may not be totally without consequences, or
right.
that the consequences of their actions may not outweigh. Balance out in the book of good and evil, you know?
So let's talk about affordable housing.
Okay.
And break it down just a little bit.
Sure.
And let's start by talking about Airbnb, which I think is probably, or short-term rentals in general, the shorthand that I'm using for that is Airbnb.
Okay.
Because there are, of course, other companies that do the same thing. So, you know, we have a fairly booming tourist economy right now.
Mm-hmm.
We have a lot of weddings in the summer.
Mm-hmm.
These are really important to a lot of people in Hudson mm-hmm. right now. I'm a bartender, you know, during the summer on the weekends. This area is bustling with tourists, and
mm-hmm.
we don't have enough hotel rooms right now
mm-hmm.
to accommodate all of those visitors.
Mm-hmm.
So on the one hand, you know, having some of that extra housing stock taken over so that we can accommodate those visitors, they can come here and spend money and produce sales tax revenue and produce, you know, for me, tips. That can be really important for where we are right now. I think that
mm-hmm.
That is at least, if it's not fair to say, that is at least the reality of the situation right now.
Yeah. My perspective on that, which comes from, you know, a wealth of personal experience in tourism economies and like living in resort towns and working in restaurants and making my living off of tourists at times, mm-hmm. Cleaning houses, tending bar, bussing tables, et cetera, et cetera. My perspective is, how important is it?
Well,
you know, because I would basically assert that, you know, everybody needs to make a living. Everybody needs to be able to make a living. To say somehow that, like, you know, the indefinite and infinite growth of tourism needs to be supported in order for people to be able to make a living, it just doesn't make sense because, you know, essentially if the squeeze wasn't on in housing, then your rents would be lower and you would need to make less of a living.
Right. But we wouldn't have as many delicious places to eat around.
Oh, so what? I mean, sorry. Like,
that's a priority. But I mean, there's also, you know, there are people who are coming in here and they're investing in restaurants, their business owners. Those are also contributions to the community.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, you know, when we talk about the problems with Airbnb or Airbnb-like companies, we should acknowledge that, you know, we're not where we need to be to just cut it off. We can't cut it off right now without creating some serious repercussions for other businesses, for restaurants and hotels and all the antique shops.
Right, so, okay, so hotels. So there are, I believe, new hotels opening. Mm-hmm. And you know, not just in Hudson proper, which is a tiny place and probably can't withstand too much, you know, development.
Do you know, I had a friend who opened up, he bought a firehouse in Austin and he turned it into a hostel. And it's booming now. And I think that Hudson could actually, the Hudson Valley only has one hostel in New Paltz.
Totally. Hostels are cool.
Hostels are great. Whenever I travel, I try and stay in them.
I also want another slogan that popped into my head. You know, I have a lot of bumper stickers I'd like to create for my own car. One of them is, not all tourists are good tourists. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's, I think it's okay for a community to be like, we wish to retain our character. And part of what that means is that we wish to discourage visitors who don't align with our character. Like,
I have never minded, you know, I go into places on the weekend, I go into coffee shops and it's, you know, kind of filled up with New Yorkers who are maybe doing the day after brunch from their wedding, and people, local people complain that it's taking them longer to get it. And I think, you know, so what? Like, the business is doing well. This is a local business, and they're here to spend money. They, you know, they're with smiles on their face and they're having a nice time. I'm not going to get in the way of that.
I guess so. I guess the part, I mean, I see that you are very much on the end of a benevolent appreciation of the growth of the businesses that can provide jobs for, like, people such as yourself. And how much money a year do you make?
I'm not going to give away my income information.
Okay.
It can be very, I will tell you, the hospitality industry can be very good in middle class. And in the winter, when we're not having a season, it can be very bad. Mm-hmm. You know, but it is seasonal. And that's something that we can address with the tourism board, whether we do a ski shuttle to the mountains to sort of stabilize the business for people who are working in the restaurant industry.
All right.
And I do want to talk about that.
Well, I just want to say something that I think to have me as a guest on your radio show, it's important to understand where I'm coming from,
of course.
The bedrock of where I come from in all my concerns about Hudson particularly. Mm-hmm. I am concerned for the Black and Brown population of Hudson.
Absolutely.
And so when we start talking about, you know, the employment and the whatever, I also then think, okay, and what are the really specific efforts that these great new employers are making to employ local youth, people from the community who may be underemployed and who could actually benefit. Like, let's benefit the people who already live here and have lived here first.
Right.
That's kind of where I come from. That's essentially what guides my thinking about all of these issues. Like, I'm happy for there to be, you know, jobs for you, jobs for my kids, you know, et cetera. But I also am really concerned with, I guess, how I see, you know, the social justice climate of Hudson.
Right. Right. And something that I think that we should acknowledge is that, you know, employers who want to move up here aren't moving up here right now because the rent is not cheap, right? You know, if you want to pay $40,000 or $50,000 a year and you say, hey, you're going to have a great life, and they look around and they say, I can't afford any of the apartments in Hudson because they're all off of the housing market because they're on Airbnbs or they're being warehoused separately, mm-hmm. We have myriad issues going on. Mm-hmm. You know, that destroys an opportunity for us to grow and to provide jobs for local people, right? We should be diverse. We're at a point now where we could be diversifying our economy rather than just saying we want to be a tourist destination and that's
right.
A lovely place to visit.
Right.
What we should be saying is, you know, look, we have all these great restaurants. We have some nice hotels and music venues. And isn't this a great place to live? Now let's get some employers up here.
I got to say, I just want to put in a word. I know we're like ranging far afield from Airbnb or short-term rental, STR concerns. But I also want to just say, like, I grew up in a tourist town to some extent. I mean, and like, I really am very familiar with a certain level of hostility that arises when a place becomes truly seasonally motivated and truly divided, you know, it's like a town and gown mentality that sets in. And it's not just, I'm talking about, you know, so that essentially, I guess what I would like to see happen with the tourism is, as you say, that there be a diversification of, you know, the kinds of businesses that come. And also, I mean, this is something that got talked about in the DRI conversation as well, like having businesses come in that are year round, that are not, you know, that are sustainably, like that are actually concerned with providing regular employment.
Absolutely. Both my parents grew up down the shore in New Jersey, in Belmar and in Point Pleasant. And we would go out during the summer and it was great fun. You go to the boardwalk and the beach and tons of people around and everyone is having a really good time. And we come back for the holidays or in the winter and it's just kind of locals hanging out at the bar staring into the bottom of some...
Talking about how much they hate the summer tourists.
Looking at the bottom of some real cheap scotch. And that's not a sustainable way to have an economy. Those are not good lives.
No.
Right. Absolutely. I am 100% with you on that.
Because also, like, the cheerful tourists don't want to be exposed to the actual attitude. You know what I'm saying?
I will tell you from my time down the shore and some from up here, I don't blame them for not wanting to be exposed to it. Like, you're here on vacation. You want to have a good time.
Right, exactly. Which is why I don't think tourist economies are really sustainable.
Not as a primary driver of a local economy. We're absolutely...
So back to STRs because we don't have that much time.
Yes. So talking about solutions for Airbnb... For the Airbnb problem, what do we think are some things that are on the table?
And let's just say STR in order to really...
Sure.
Okay. Well, let me... Before we... So solutions that are on the table. Let me first make it really clear that when we talk about legislating STRs, we are not generally talking... No, in fact, we are explicitly not talking about situations where a person who lives in a home wishes to rent out a room in their home who wishes to rent out a room in their primary residence for an STR. That's not what we're talking about legislating.
Right.
Because that does not damage the community. It doesn't damage...
Well, certainly it has an effect on the rental market. I mean, if you would otherwise have a roommate, but instead you just think, okay, I'm just going to have an Airbnb,
well,
you lose something that way.
Yes, true. I hadn't actually, I mean, generally the people who do it, I don't think they're necessarily people who would otherwise have a roommate, but I don't really know. I mean, I hadn't actually thought about that aspect of it. I don't know. Getting into that kind of micro, that's pretty hard to really legislate.
Certainly,
like
I have
that.
A two bedroom now. I use one room as my office. I think I was in there about 3 months ago once. But I don't want to. But I also don't want a roommate. You know, I don't want to live with someone. My dog does not want to live with someone.
Right.
We've had discussions about it. She's been very clear.
Yeah, these kinds of conversations are important to have
with your dog.
Domestic partner.
Yeah. as she's spooning me late at night.
Yeah.
Just the two of us, Daddy. So we're talking about, so the solutions that we're talking about,
mm-hmm.
you know, let's identify that we have this problem in the housing market. Right. And we wish to create a solution that does not totally make the tourism economy implode, but mm-hmm. does allow us to let some other areas of the local economy blossom.
Mm-hmm.
So what do we think the solution could be?
Well, I mean, I'll say what I think the solution could be and then you say what you think. I think the solution that will allow tourism to continue to blossom is that there need to be more legit legal hotels and hotel rooms and motels. You know, there's plenty of motels around as well.
I know some of the hourly ones, yeah.
Yep, maybe there'll be some upgrades to some of the motels that are in the immediate vicinity. And that, you know, a resolution needs to be introduced and passed in the city council that makes non-owner occupied short-term rentals illegal, and that there needs to be also, in addition to that, in order to deal with the enforcement problem that has been, you know, brought up again and again, whenever you mention this, because everybody probably doesn't know, but New York City made short-term on owner-occupied rental illegal years ago. And everybody who has experienced a New York City Airbnb will laugh when they hear. Everybody who has experienced a New York City Airbnb will laugh when they hear that.
New Yorkers who have narked on some of their neighbors.
Well, good for them.
Yes.
I support that, because why shouldn't we narc on things that are damaging?
Right. And certainly if strangers are wandering around your building, it contributes to a sense of general unease.
Yeah. And everything. But yeah, it's that whole other issue of, I mean, we have many people in Hudson who currently have the experience of having no neighbors, of their little nook of Hudson being sort of like a ghost town during the week and then strangers on the weekend. So anyway, that aspect of it is pretty clear. But then, where was I? So New York City just passed either it's legislation or an amendment or something that now is creating a mandatory information disclosure of who are the owners. So Airbnb and other short-term rentals are now going to be required to provide open information about who owns the properties that are being listed on their sites, so that it can be made clear when it's a property that's owned by a person who does not live there. Because, you know, as far as tax rolls go, you can only have one primary residence. And so that will make it really easy, ostensibly, to track which short-term rentals are not primary residences, and either fine the owner or, that's the part that I suppose will be up to individual municipalities, how they wish to, like, punish the illegal activity.
Right, right. So, I mean, how do you execute this? You want more hotels to come in. Right.
I mean, I don't particularly want more hotels to come in, but I think that in terms of dealing with, I mean, that's how, you know, I guess it's like, let's wait. Let's look back into history. Where have tourists formerly stayed? They have stayed in hotels, or they have rented a home for on the Cape, which is where I, you know, spent my teenage years. There's weekly rentals of houses that are, that kind of thing. So it's under, I don't know actually how that, I guess that's basically.
I mean, when this was not a problem, when renting a house was not a big issue.
Right.
It wasn't a big issue, right? You know, when there's only a few people who are renting out a house for the summer, because there's not Airbnb to link up all of these people.
Right.
And to make this,
that is really
to make
the issue
this a problem.
Is before it was like monetized to, in, I mean, obviously, it was monetized from the beginning,
right.
Like, and, you know, this is a thing, like, people have always done that when they live in desirable locations, like by a body of water, essentially, or by a mountain.
Right. But it's not necessarily, it hasn't always necessarily been
right.
a just, big problem, you know, especially in a, like a ski town. Right.
Right.
That's not going to be, it's a
there was not a
remote
global
mountain.
Corporation
right.
marketing, rewarding and like otherwise controlling the situation.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. They're the largest. They control more rooms than anyone else
yeah.
on Earth, and yet they own no actual hotels.
It's a brilliant scheme.
It is a brilliant scheme.
Oh my
I wish
God.
I wish I'd come up with it.
Well, see, I don't. That's the difference between us, John. You're like, if I could profit off it, I love it.
No, I would still be yes. I mean, if I was a billionaire off of Airbnb, I would totally be focused on affordable housing issues. I would just be doing it from my private jet.
Right.
So okay, let's say that we do want to address the housing issue. Let's say that we have decided that more hotel rooms are ideal. Those take several years to build.
Mm-hmm.
Correct. So in the meantime, the Airbnbs that we have, you know, to me, welcome to...
You know what I'm saying?
I will tell you from my time down the shore. Some from up here, I don't blame them for not wanting to be... exposed to it. Like, you're here on vacation.
You... Again and again, whenever you mention this, because everybody probably doesn't know, but New York City made an owner-occupied rental illegal years ago. To narc on each other, essentially.
I know a few New Yorkers who have narked on some of their neighbors.
Well, good for them.
Yes.
I support that, because why shouldn't we narc on things that are damaging?
Right, and certainly if strangers are wandering around your building, it contributes to a sense of general unease.
Yeah, and everything. But yeah, it's that whole other issue of, I mean, we have many people in Hudson who currently have the experience of having no neighbors, you know, of their little nook of Hudson being sort of like a ghost town during the week and then strangers on the weekend. So anyway, that aspect of it is pretty clear. But then... where was I? So New York City just passed either it's legislation or an amendment or something that now is creating a mandatory information disclosure of who are the owners. So Airbnb and other short-term rentals are now going to be required to provide open information about who owns the properties that are being listed on their sites, so that it can be made clear when it's a property that's owned by a person who does not live there. Because you know, as far as tax rolls go, you can only have one primary residence. And so that will make it really easy, ostensibly, to track which short-term rentals are not primary residences, and either fine the owner or, you know, that's the part that I suppose will be up to individual municipalities, how they wish to, like, punish the illegal activity.
Right, right. So, I mean, how do you execute this? You want more hotels to come in. Right.
I mean, I don't particularly want more hotels to come in, but I think that in terms of dealing with, I mean, that's how, you know, I guess it's like, wait. Let's look back into history. Where have tourists formerly stayed? They have stayed in hotels, or they have rented a home for on the Cape, which is where I, you know, spent my teenage years. There's weekly rentals of houses that are, you know, that kind of thing. So it's under, I don't know actually how that, I guess that's basically.
I mean, when this was not a problem, when renting a house was not a big issue.
Right.
It wasn't a big issue, right? You know, when there's only a few people who are renting out a house for the summer, because there's not Airbnb to link up all of these people.
Right.
And to make this,
that is really the issue,
a problem.
Before it was like monetized to, obviously, it was monetized from the beginning,
right.
Like, and, you know, this is a thing, like, people have always done that when they live in desirable locations, like by a body of water, essentially, or by a mountain.
Right. But it's not necessarily, it hasn't always necessarily been
right.
a just, big problem, you know, especially in like a ski town. Right.
Right.
That's not going to be, it's a
there was not a
remote
global
mountain.
Corporation
right.
marketing, rewarding, and like otherwise controlling the situation.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. They're the largest, they control more rooms than anyone else
yeah.
on Earth, and yet they own no actual hotels.
It's a brilliant scheme.
It is a brilliant scheme.
Oh my
I wish
God.
I wish I'd come up with it.
Well, see, I don't. That's the difference between us, John. You're like, if I could profit off it, I love it.
No, I would still be, yes. I mean, if I was a billionaire off of Airbnb, I would totally be focused on affordable housing issues. I would just be doing it for my private jet.
Right.
So, okay, let's say that we do want to, you know, we do want to address the, we do want to address the housing issue. Let's say that we have decided that more hotel rooms are ideal. Those take several years to build, correct? So in the meantime, the Airbnbs that we have, you know, to me, and this would be my proposal, is that we have many Airbnbs in the city. Whether or not these people made a speculative investment, and whether or not if they lose their shirt, I even really, if that's my concern or not, you know, they are still here. My proposal would be that as long as that owner still runs that Airbnb, we continue permitting that Airbnb.
So you're talking about like a grandfather kind of situation?
Well, not maybe a permanent thing, but when they sell their building, right, and most 30-year mortgages are turned over in 7 years. That's why the 30-year mortgage is tied to a 7-year treasury.
John, I just have to say, I don't accept any solutions that are based on numbers games. Like, well, oh, statistically people only own their buildings for 7 years.
We have a certain number of rooms right now. Mm-hmm. I would like to see that number of rooms decrease. We have a real estate market probably due for a correction, so we'll probably have some sellers pretty soon. By grandfathering in the people who have Airbnbs now, but saying, look, when you sell this, you need to tell people this is not going to be an Airbnb. This has to be on the rental market.
You mean instead of the current predatory practices where people are like, this is a really wonderful short-term rental opportunity, or whatever they say on their stupid listings.
I can see you're a big fan of real estate agents.
Look, I mean, you know, God bless the real estate agent with a conscience, you know, but not the ones who don't have a conscience.
There's no such animal. Mm-hmm. But to grandfather the people who are existing in allows us to shrink down, you know, so that we still have a number of Airbnb rooms. At the same time, we are noting that we are incentivizing a hotel to move in. Right. Or we are incentivizing
I really don't believe in economic trickle-down theory type solutions.
That's not a trickle-down theory.
No,
I think that that's just a supply and demand kind of issue.
Right. I don't really believe in that kind of solution.
I don't. Really?
I really don't.
I mean, how? Well, okay. Let's say that I do. I think that the proposal is, without too much hurt to the people who are already doing Airbnbs, whether or not they've committed a sin or not, my goal is to correct the issue. And we can't just correct the issue right away without hurting a lot of people. There are a lot of people who work in hotels. There are a lot of people who work in restaurants and who work in bars and who work for weddings that are going to be affected if all of a sudden you can't stay in Hudson anymore. Because there are plenty of wedding venues in Catskill and the Catskill Mountains. Uh-huh. They would be happy to say, well, we do allow Airbnb so everyone can stay. And that is disruptive to an industry that, whether we like it or not, is right now
I would just say that industry has already, quote unquote, disrupted regular life in Hudson.
But then it is now part of the Hudson economy.
But only in the past, like what, like 5 years or something?
Doesn't matter. I've lived here for 3 years. Do you want to disrupt my whole life and my way of income?
Well, I mean, John, you're an able-bodied person. You could make a living some other way. I'm sorry. It's like,
you're right. I am an able-bodied person. But that's, you know, that's essentially like what we did. You're essentially NAFTA-ing workers, right? Hey, all of these factory workers are going to lose their jobs, but they're able-bodied. They can do something else. You need to point to something else before you just pull the rug out from underneath someone.
Okay, well, let's see. So, number
one,
I don't believe that the wedding industry would just disappear if, let's say 60% of the Airbnbs that go on in Hudson, I'm pulling numbers completely, I'm just making this up, okay?
These
are not, let's say 60% of the Airbnbs would be shut down immediately if legislation passed that made it, right now, you know, for every illegal STR to persist, like, nope, sorry, you must cease and desist right now, which would be, I mean, I agree with you that nothing happens right now, right? So that wouldn't happen really like that. What would potentially happen right now, though, is a fine, a significant fine for people who continue to rent out their rent out non-primary residences for STRs. And maybe, I mean, I feel like that's where I could see sort of a middle ground is like, okay, let's say there was some, you know, 3-year period or something where it's like you can back out of this practice.
Right.
And but you have to pay a fine, and that money has to specifically go to, for example, pay for the housing coordinator position in Hudson.
And that is another issue that I would like to touch on. You were part of the housing task force created by the Downtown Revitalization Initiative.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the proposals was a housing coordinator for Hudson. Can you tell me a little bit about what that housing coordinator might do?
Yeah. Well.
And what needs did they decide needed to be addressed with the housing coordinator? Turning off of Airbnb for just a second.
Yeah. I mean, one of the issues that Hudson faces is a tremendous amount of disorganization within its infrastructure around all the different agencies. And I don't mean that the agencies themselves necessarily are disorganized, but rather that, and I don't even just mean agencies, I mean all the different sort of pieces of the puzzle of housing, which is, it includes like so many different, you know, individuals who care about and are concerned about issues of housing, and then actual organizations like, for example, the very controversial HCDPA.
I know it's alphabet soup. It's
yeah,
very, yeah.
Hudson, what does it stand for? Hudson
Community Development.
Community Development.
PA.
Yeah, exactly. So.
Which is focused on housing. Sheena Salvino was kind of the housing coordinator.
Right, and is no longer in that position. And right. There's questions about whether that whole agency should be continuing to function. It's a public-private interface, which makes it, controversial in a bunch of ways. And so anyway, that organization, I mean, an example of the level of disorganization, though, that I will bring out there is that I've been involved in this affordable housing work for a couple of years. And in my first 6 months, I had a phone call with a person named Bill Fisher, who is the Fair Housing Officer of Columbia County. He is a person who has held that office for quite a while. It is, I believe it's an elected, well, no, it's not an elected, it's an appointment. That is his job. He is the Fair Housing Officer for Columbia County. Nobody that I have spoken to in any of the agencies or the elected officials or the city council, whatever, knows who this person is or what they do.
I actually met him last time at the Housing and Transportation Committee. He did give a presentation.
Well, so there you go.
Yeah.
So he is coming, he is surfacing. And part of the reason he's surfacing is because, you know, because these conversations are going on and people are starting to say, wait a minute, there's really a huge amount of disorganization. So he's surfacing. I'm not blaming him for being underground. I think that, like, there's just been dysfunction and he's part of it, but not to blame for it.
Right. What do you think the housing coordinator needs to be doing?
Well, let me just finish that.
Sure.
It turned out that Sheena Salvino, actually, part of her job title as director of
CDPA,
actually was to fulfill that role within the city of Hudson, which could both be the fact that she never was fulfilling that role and nobody even knew she was really or paid attention. It's in the city code.
Right. Certainly, I know that I remember Sheena had quite a bit on her plate coming from several agencies.
Again,
I don't blame her for being like, also, if you'd like to talk to me about fair housing.
Well, I mean, given
I have a few more hours.
Given that, like, you know, affordable housing was a major thing that surfaced again in the last couple of years and that didn't ever enter the conversation. It's like, okay, where disorganization. That's an example of that.
Right.
So the housing coordinator's job would be to coordinate all of these efforts to from the ground up to basically, like, I'm sorry if I'm shouting. I can't even. I'm super excited. But, like,
your enthusiasm is infectious.
May that be the only thing that's infectious.
This Thanksgiving, yeah.
the coordinator would coordinate from the ground up, starting with the actual individuals who seek and require and need support in their efforts to find affordable housing, like capital A affordable, so low-income subsidized housing.
Right, government-backed programs.
Yep.
Yes.
So individuals in Hudson who are seeking support for that, that would be part of their job, would be to provide that support, whether it's simply linking that person up with one of these agencies, you know, that already exist, including Habitat for Humanity, or including, you know, any of the things that are present in Hudson, and which each of them has a person who's supposed to be sort of dealing with housing issues, but none of them are speaking to each other.
Mm-hmm.
So that stuff, then also dealing with issues around, you know, zoning, issues around, and I don't, when I say dealing with, I just mean facilitating conversations, keeping the information organized and slightly centralized so that everybody's not asking the same questions over and over. And, you know, and also so that, yeah, that there isn't a lot of kind of misinformation floating around at times, but just, and you know, I don't know, potentially doing public advocacy, doing, public events at which things can be like explained essentially to people that they affect, lots of different
people. You know, certainly if you're getting evicted in the city of Hudson, it's very hard to find an advocate for yourself.
Well, see, John,
or to understand
that
how
is where the fair housing officer would come in. You're
right.
Getting evicted.
Right.
Somebody needs to be directly available and responsible to
walk
assist.
You through the process.
Yep.
Right. So that you know what your rights are and you know what your responsibilities are, because the
right.
last thing that you want is to come home and find all your stuff outside and the sheriff standing there.
Sure.
Shooing you
Nobody
on your way.
Nobody likes that.
Right.
And so, right. So the fact that there is this fair housing officer, but that, and that also that the previous, you know, that there was supposed to be a person within the city of Hudson, because that's, there's also issues that we haven't spoken about, but, you know, there's county versus city.
Right.
Issues.
And this might be a shared service position because the Hudson is the seat of the county. There's a lot of stuff. There's a lot of overlap between
yes.
the city and the county here.
Although, traditionally, the emphasis, the money is in the county. It seems, this is my...
That has been the case in Columbia County, yes.
Right. This yeah. is my, like, totally layperson's perception of this problem.
Their budget
is
significantly larger than Hudson's.
Right. And
yeah.
so the city, and meanwhile, the city of Hudson has lots of very Hudson-specific issues that aren't really answerable by solutions that might work for the rest of the county.
Right. And culturally, the rest of the county is somewhat different than the city of Hudson.
Yeah,
they
it's
don't
much
have...
wealthier or parts of it. Pockets of it are wealthier. Pockets of it are poorer.
Right. Certainly there are pockets of Hudson that are quite wealthy.
Right. But there is not the level of concentrated poverty that we have in Hudson.
Correct.
And there are very few people of color living, I think, out in most of the areas of the rest of Columbia County.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure about that. Again, loose lips, you know, I mean, I'm throwing anecdotal observations around. But.
Right. So the housing coordinator would essentially act as a bridge and an advocate. Do we feel that there is enough attention being paid to this in the city government right now?
I mean,
they passed a vacancy. They passed the vacancy fee. Right.
Do you mean to the question of housing in general or the housing coordinator?
Well, the response of city government right now and the city government that we have, our mayor, our common council president, our common council members, you know, I have not seen any discussion of Airbnb, I don't think, this year.
Right.
At the common council.
No. And I think it's yeah.
It's somewhat, which to me is somewhat problematic because it does seem like an issue that needs to be addressed and researched head on. And I'm not seeing a lot of activity from our common council on that particular topic. We did pass the vacancy law, which I don't think has a lot of teeth. That could have been a tax, because I don't think anybody who is warehousing apartments, who is, say, a wealthy you know, a very wealthy organization is really going to look at those and say, oh God, we better get these units back on right away. This right. is going to, this is really going to bankrupt us.
Right. Similarly to the lodging tax. I mean, the fact that the lodging tax actually goes directly to the tourism board.
No, it does not. That's only part of it goes to the tourism board. It does fund the tourism board, but a lot of it does go into the general fund.
Well, but similarly though, I feel like it should be earmarked. You know, the general, I'm suspicious of this general fund and I want to know more about it in terms of housing issues. But like, so no, I mean, I think it's been a slow start for the newly formed Housing and Transportation Committee, mm-hmm. Which, you know, has not been able to meet as often as it might have. And I don't believe that they've talked about short-term rentals. And it seems like there needs to be more of a push. And you know, I'm working on that. Other people are working on it. We're working on it. And anybody who wants to get involved with working on it, and especially anyone who has like expertise in data, working with data, because, you know, part of what anybody who tries to do anything in this city runs up against is the, the immediate suggestion always seems to be, well, let's do a study. Let's do a comprehensive, you know, study of this problem.
It can be a bit slow going at times, and that certainly can be a frustration.
Exactly.
At the same time, I think that, you know, we want to take the right steps, not say the immediate steps. I've seen bills get thrown about here that, well, there's a problem, we have to do something, so let's do this.
Uh-huh.
And I think sometimes that can be a little ham-fisted and imprecise to the problems that we have. So a more, you know, to your point, like, you don't think that tourism is greatly affected and that people can get other jobs. To me, I think that mm-hmm. people who are working in tourism would be greatly affected if we had people from New York stop coming up.
Well, but again, it's like they're not going to just, it's not like there's nowhere to stay without Airbnb. Okay. And it's also not like Airbnb.
But those hotels do run at 100% occupancy in the summer.
Uh-huh. Right. They're booked way in advance for, and if there was a demonstrated need for more hotels, then more hotels will be built.
And I think that a comprehensive analysis might give us that opportunity to find that data.
Well, no, but I don't think that has to be done by the city. I think that is a work that can be thrust back upon the developers, you know? I mean, developers, like another thing that really burns my britches is is all this talk about, like, oh, we have to incentivize things for developers. It's like, you know, really? Like, I think that developers stand to make money, and that is why they wish to develop. And so, Why should the city, like, don't incentivize developers, make them do their work?
I mean, certainly there's an argument to be made that if they are getting incentives from elsewhere and they have limited resources to develop a site, you know, like the CAS redevelopment is going to cost, I'm not sure how many millions of dollars, but, you know, if they can make that money and somebody else, if Kingston is offering them more money to do something,
you know,
on the Rondout.
Let them go to Kingston and let another developer, maybe a better developer, who really loves Hudson. Maybe make it so that it's not just about where are they getting the most money, but about where do they actually want to be.
Well, you know, I have to tell you, if I owned a real estate development company, I'd probably direct my people to make the most money.
Well, sure, but, you know, maybe somebody else wouldn't. Maybe somebody else would have different values.
So that is going to probably wrap up our time here. Are there any closing thoughts that you have? Thanksgiving recipes?
I just bought 2 pounds of wild mushrooms, and I'm going to fry them up. So psyched.
That's excellent. So a happy Thanksgiving to everyone. We will be back shortly. Rebecca, thank you so much for joining us. Thank you.